Hello, and welcome to Nerds of the Old Republic, the podcast where we watch and read nerdy things so you can too. I'm Adam.
I am Sean.
And I'm Mike.
And we are going to give our lukewarm takes, because it's a little bit after the opening of Dune 2. So not quite hot takes, but for those of you who are like me, who could not make the time to go see it, and then sat in a movie theater by yourself at 10 o'clock at night to see it, which apparently I enjoyed, so like maybe it's the only way to see it.
Oh, I did the same thing. Yeah. It's the first time in my life I've ever gone to a movie by myself, and I loved the experience. I'm going to do it again.
Well, this will probably be live for streaming once it's on the like HBO or whatever streaming app. So yeah. You could probably watch it while listening to us.
That's true. Actually, we could be your Mystery Science Theater 3000. I was going to make up a number so we weren't like copyright infringing, but I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. I doubt they're listening. Well, wait a minute. They might be. Huh.
Yeah.
And our thousands of downloads.
Indeed. Yeah, we are multi-thousand downloaders at this point. So I'm stoked. And we're going to, before we get into like recapping our thoughts on Dune 1 and the movie, we're going to talk about this delicious fucking cocktail that Mike made us, because it's got so many things that we can't look past it. Like, it's just gorgeous. Mike, do you mind?
The first thing I have to say is that my wife made these delicious cocktails, not me. This is one of her specialties though. It's, it's a margarita, but it's a special jalapeno mix that they sell at, I think, Trader Joe's of all places, and only once a year. Like, it hits the shelf. She knows when it is. I think it's early May. And she goes and buys like 20 bottles of it, and it lasts us like a year. Mm-hmm. But it's like a jalapeno margarita mix. So obviously it's got tequila and the usual stuff in it. She puts cucumbers in there as a garnish. But the jalapeno mix is just a little different twist on the margarita, and it's a little spicier, and I fucking love it. I always find a traditional margarita, not in the middle of summer when it's 90 degrees, not a traditional margarita hits the spot, but, you know, in the colder months, these jalapeno ones really, have become what I'm used to and enjoy. So, yeah. And it seemed again, appropriate because of the spice connection. Dune has a little bit of that in there.
Yeah. A little, the spice must flow.
Yeah.
And it flows brilliantly in this drink.
Oh, definitely. This sounds like my next, you know, how some people like stop up on a pumpkin spice stuff.
Oh yeah.
Like from August till like November.
Yeah. I'm guilty.
This might be my next thing for sure. Cause this is delicious. Thank you.
I'm very impressionable. You know,
what are the, is that cucumber or is that jalapeno in it?
Oh, that's actually cucumber in it. Yeah. She usually makes it like pretty fancy, like on the glass, but we tried to, use these little clay shot glasses this time to really fancy it up. Mm-hmm. And, that didn't work out cause they're just too small, and we would have been pouring repeatedly throughout the episodes. So, the cucumbers are in the drink for that reason, as opposed to being a garnish on the side, but yes, cucumbers.
I love the spicy aftertones, but the refreshingness when you get a drink of it, it's really good.
It's dangerous for me in that way, because I could chug a lot of this and then forget that it's got alcohol in it.
Like, yeah, we do, man. We sit on the patio every so often, and she mix up a batch of this, and it goes faster than you'd think.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing, considering I now know it's limited edition. I feel extra privileged.
Yeah, really.
On top of the clay pots. There's a lot of callbacks to previous episodes. Clay pots, Campo. I brought some mezcal if we're interested in switching up
very
the flavors.
Interesting. Oh, see, and then we could bring the clay glasses back for that. Yeah, there you
just
go.
Just for the mezcal.
We'll they were not for naught.
No. I think our eyes are starting to turn blue from these drinks here. It's
I've had my mind opened, and I can see both the future and past at the same time.
Yeah, I can navigate the cosmos right now.
Unfortunately, it's highly addictive, and this stuff only gets sold for a few weeks in May. So you're going to feel those withdrawals pretty soon.
Is that the bottle there? Is it the Harkonnens? Harkonnens spice mix?
Obviously, hilarious. And that's why they only sell it once a year, is because they have to, it's coming from a long way away.
From a dude who...
Rabin's Reserve.
Oh, God. From a dude who, like, dips himself in pitch oil every 45 seconds. We're making some references to the movie. Might as well switch over. Dune 1 came out, and we had the chance to see it all at the same time.
Yeah.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, that was
the stars
cool.
aligned. We saw it in IMAX.
Yep.
And I just remember being fantastically blown away by the scale. Like, I felt like Villeneuve was able to capture the fact that this was a galaxy that you were working across, which not many movies can do. So I was super impressed with that. Is there anything you guys want to just like bring up from the memory banks from Dune 1
and Dune 2. I watched it again with my daughter because she wanted to see the second one with me. So I'm like, well, you got to watch the first one. So we watched it. And I just, same kind of memory of just the epic feel. It almost had like that golden age of Hollywood biblical epic kind of like sense of scale to it, which I thought was really cool. You know, it's the acting is super stoic, but they take it so seriously. It's, I wouldn't say it's like comically Shakespearean level, but it just, there's reverence sounds too like the thing to say, right? But it's like they definitely took it like the source material for what it was, and I think did a really good job with it.
And I think a common criticism that I've seen of Dune 1, maybe the only criticism that I've seen repeatedly, is that it's slow or that not a lot happens in it. I don't remember feeling that way when I watched the movie the first time. And I also rewatched it before seeing Dune 2. And damn you, margaritas. And I still didn't feel that way at all. It certainly doesn't have as much action as the movie we're about to get into, but I felt that the pacing was excellent in the first. I liked everything about it.
Yeah, I agree. I felt like just when I was like shifting in my seat, like, oh, okay, some physical action on screen took place, whether it was like, Timothée Chalamet doing some sort of physical feat, or like being attacked or running away, or like the massacre on
the Harkonnen showing up. Yeah. The sandworms first appearance, there were some big moments in that. Honestly,
the big ship, the tube thing. How unexplained and yet just like, you just know that that's what that is.
I'm honestly watching that movie the second time with those criticisms in mind, just to see if it registers for me the second time. And I'm like, God, I'm like, if you are watching these people jump across space and you're watching like the explosions and the fleeing across the desert and the sandworms and the hand-to-hand duels to the death, you're watching all of that and you're thinking like, not much is happening here, then you've just been very jaded by Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This just wouldn't be your movie.
No, I guess not. I mean, to me, that's like everything happening. That's pretty crazy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. On top of like the whole gathering of a religious army, fighting that urge to just go straight to like, holy war right away and everything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess we're ready to launch into two then.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have so many things to say.
Besides Dune 2, the dose. The Dune-ing.
Dune 2, even Duner.
Oh, Dune harder.
Ooh, yes.
Mo Dune, Mo Prop, no.
Yeah.
Dune, where's my car?
Yeah,
that's bellworthy.
Nailed it. All right.
That's a reference our younger audience will not get.
You see, there was this Ashton Kutcher film. I'll just look it up later. Just IMDb.
It's a work of art, really.
Oh, man.
What's mine say? Sweet. What's mine say? Dude. Yeah. Yeah. If you're old enough to drink and you have enough drinks and then watch that movie, you'll get a laugh.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't remember the film at all. I just remember the title of it. There's been a lot of memes out that I've seen lately, though, connecting to Lebowski, and they put like, Jeff Bridges in his Lebowski form against the backdrop of Arrakis.
Oh, God.
It just says like dude at the top instead of Dune.
Oh, my God. The Dune abides.
I love it.
Yep.
I love it. Well, so getting into Dune 2, it picks up right where Dune 1 left off. Like, we're in Arrakis, the desert, and we're watching Paul like try to be a Fremen, which I'm going to have to work hard to not say Freeman as I did in the first cast.
That was Sean nailed that, right? Weren't you the one who told us that was the pronunciation? We looked it up and
Well, I am.
God damn it.
I know.
I am the cast historian. So.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah. Yeah. I was surprised how quickly they got into like that internal conflict with Paul about not wanting to start the holy war and gather followers and stuff. I thought that the way they dealt with him integrating into a whole different society, even though he was an outsider in the book, I remember taking probably 200 pages out of a 600 page book.
Yeah.
But I thought they did well with the pacing there because they had enough trials for him to like fit in, but not so many that you're like, okay, I get it. He's an outsider. Fine. Cool. Whatever.
Yeah. You like, they had to do what they had to do for the movie. And like Jamis's whole thing with him fighting him, and then they cut out the wife and how he got his coffee set and all that stuff was just totally wiped out of it. So it was, you know, obviously that there's a ton of lore that they just sliced through it.
Yeah, I do feel like if you read the book, you kind of saw the gaps.
Right.
But I understood why.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have to aim for at least not the middle ground, but maybe like the literate middle ground.
Right, right. I real quick before you jump in, I will say that I give them a pass on things like that.
Absolutely.
It progresses the story. Mm-hmm. It was tight. It worked. But spoiler alert, before we get to the end of this cast, I will have problems with pacing. So we're going to come back to this.
You know, the closest I'm going to come to offering a criticism of this movie might have to do with pacing, too. I'm not even sure that I want to call it a criticism, though. It's very, very tepid. But on this point, though, I remember watching the there's many excellent behind the scenes documentaries on the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Mm-hmm. If you were nerdy enough like myself to buy the extended edition Blu-rays when they came out. And among these documentaries, they also have commentary tracks where you can listen to the directors like talk about what they were doing as they were interpreting the script and everything and making the movie. And that's where I really started to understand like pacing between books, between literature and film, because they talk about a lot of things that were left out of the movie. Not even obvious things, like obviously you cut out Tom Bombadil because where the shit does that fit? Yeah, but like a lot of things that seem like they would have been really cool on screen, and they would talk about like, look where we were with the movie. If you put that in there, you also have to put this in here, and then you have to, that's going to end up being 20 minutes that you're tacking onto the film, and it brings all the, you know, those kind of conversations. I was like, dude, I never thought about that shit before. And what is amazing to me with the Dune films here, long as they are, they managed to, you know, cut out a lot of stuff that if you've read the book, you know, you're like, you notice it. But at the same time, there's so much fucking shit they don't cut out and that they are able to cram into 2.5 hours time in both of the films. I think it's really impressive how they've built in so much of it.
Yeah, I actually in 2:46, that's the official runtime for two. I didn't think they really cut out anything of import, which I mean, it's a 600 page book, roughly the version I read was at least. So it's easy to be as a director, like we'll just take this middle third out things mm-hmm. and just kind of like let it right. be because you already got your second movie. So, you know, how much pushback are you going to get from a studio about including the, I forget the name of it, but the, like the holy cistern of people's water, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. that was probably 10 minutes of screen time.
Right.
So what's that? Like 2-3 days of shooting plus all the special effects that went into it when they had to blow up the Holy Mountain, which name I forget. Cause that's what I do. I just forget names.
And there's so many names.
There's so many, like I have the cast list up and I'm like, oh, that's their name. That was the person sitting next to Christopher Walken. Like that's how I remember it. Sorry. That's just how I remember it. But just to circle back, like, so much money and time spent on 10 minutes of screen time that mm-hmm. maybe other people would have been tempted to cut out.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So Sean, you mentioned having problems with pacing.
Well, and I mean, it's
we're free flowing tonight. Do you want to keep going? So Paul, maybe we'll back up, we'll cut it and go back and just go in order.
Okay. So do you want me to just air all of my grievances and then you guys can like pick them apart? Or do you want me to like,
sure. That might be fun.
All right. Yeah.
You have multiple grievances.
Well, you know, as an aficionado of the books, mm-hmm. someone who has read pretty deep into the series,
he speaks Fremen people.
Yeah, he does. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I think one of his criticisms is going to be some of the accent and pronunciation of the language right. in the movie.
My license plate is Muad'Dib. So.
Yeah. He's got Huizac Hatorak tattooed on life tattooed on his stomach.
Yeah. But, okay.
It's actually a tramp stamp.
Damn it, dude.
Is it down his spine? That's a real long word to have as a tramp stamp.
That's going
to
be our album cover for our forthcoming spoken word album.
Oh, I love it.
It's just a close-up picture of my tramp stamp.
Right. That's gonna be a big seller.
Oh, yeah. Especially with the little hair trail.
I was thinking it, but I didn't want to say it.
Oh, I'll say it.
So you were saying.
Anywho.
Just need a little sex appeal to sell the cast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, a little back hair.
A little bit of, you know, back fat rolling up over the top of the belt level is perfect. All right, look. It's a great movie. I'm not going to say that it's probably not, as a series so far, like the greatest sci-fi achievement on film to date. It very well could be.
I've had multiple people say that when I talk about it with them.
Fan-fucking-tastic. Mm-hmm. Like, you just wipe the grin off my face after seeing both of these movies. You couldn't do it. It was just, they're awesome. But, of course, I'm like the comic book guy in The Simpsons. There's always going to be something that grinds my gears a little bit there.
Well, actually, you missed
the... Actually, you forget about the... So... There was a lot of that Fremen backstory and Paul's acclimation to the culture that, yes, you're right, they cut it for time, things like that. But a lot of things I thought were more important that should have stayed. Now, naming them by point right now, I think would take me forever. So I'll just make the blanket statement that I think they could have spent a little more time on developing Paul's character, because he goes from would-be savior to full-blown,
yes,
basically like emperor god,
right?
Yeah,
by the end of the film, when it's like, how the fuck did this happen?
Right,
they one did the war council,
yes, how it happened. Exactly. They did the same thing to the other Harkonnen there, the
not Fade Rotha, but
yeah, Fade Rotha. The what the hell is he? The Baron,
Na Baron.
Yeah, he has like that 20-minute. Like thing on their planet, which was filmed in infrared and everything. It's super cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Really cool.
Really neat character. If you spend all this time on what turns out to be almost an inconsequential person, like, we didn't need this super extended, like, this guy's an animal. He like kills for fun. Oh, wait, his uncle put him in this. They could have, like, that I think could have been foreshortened for a better development of Paul, his mother, his sister, who, don't even get me started on how they butchered that fucking thing.
Okay, that is my one, Aaliyah. Now that you mention it, that is my only criticism, actually, in the whole thing.
So, you probably feel the same way I feel about it, that she didn't show up as this hyper-prescient, like, 4-year-old toddler or whatever that stabs the Emperor stabs Grandpa Harkonnen.
Yeah, she was like an extra-accelerated aged baby, right? Because her mom drank the water of life.
Yeah, she was born conscious, fully conscious. With all of the memories and lives of all the other grandmothers, or they're called, beforehand. They still kind of worked it in the womb and everything, but because of the accelerated timeline, it, I think, again, robs the story of something that Herbert did, which was really neat.
Yeah.
You've got this preposterous, absurd concept, super high concept of this little tiny toddler who's fully human, fully adult, fully realized, and goes on a murder spree in this like ridiculousness at the end. Now, that to me is important to the whole Dune thing, because she is such an important character later on. You've got Anya Taylor-Joy plays her as an adult for like 3 seconds.
Right. I love you.
Yeah. And it's like, what?
Yes.
Like, what the fuck was that?
If you didn't read the book, you wouldn't know
exactly
who or why.
My daughter's like going like, what is this? And I'm like, I'll explain it to you in the car. And I had to like go on like a fucking dissertation on who this character is. I'm like, you know that how her mom keeps talking to her, you know, her unborn daughter? That's her as an adult. But don't worry about that, because apparently that doesn't happen until later on in the story. Now,
so on this point, and it's weird, they don't have Anya Taylor-Joy listed on like the Google cast for the movie. I'm scrolling down the whole thing and I'm not seeing her. And I was just trying to pull up another screen here and get her name, because I was just blanking on her name. But I was going to make that point. I was like, why do you go out and get an actress as big and successful as she is and put her in the movie for a grand total of, what was it, 6 seconds or less?
Right.
Yeah. Like, it was like a blink and you would have missed that completely.
It's like getting Meryl Streep to play the like the other Grand Witch there, who's only in there for like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
He gets the voice, silence. Yeah. Like, that was badass, by the way. Yeah, everybody at my theater went berserk when he did that. Right. That was super cool. But I'll end my grievances with this. The only other problem I have, and I cannot believe that this is a problem for me, was the miscasting of Christopher fucking Walken.
Yeah.
Why in the hell do you cast Christopher fucking Walken to play the Emperor of the Universe? That made zero sense.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say, to start with that point.
Yeah. Floor is yours.
To start with that point, I thought that was weird to begin with, but then I was like, but I have seen Christopher Walken in random movies play like very menacing, sinister characters. Mm-hmm,
indeed.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so they're probably channeling that Walken. It's just Walken in his
full
Walken. Queen's
he's
accent.
Just sitting there.
Yeah. I mean, you just almost expect him to start like asking for cowbell or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like the way he plays
the
character. I was like, I was kind of chuckling to myself. I'm like, I don't know if I hate this or love this. Like for this,
I had the same problem. So they're going like, Paul, you know, I really want to acknowledge your family's claim here, but you know, I need a little bit more cowbell.
Yeah, you're gonna be in charge of your daddy's spice. My daddy hid the spice in only place.
Yeah, yeah. Dear listener, I know you can't see this, but we had many a text message going back and forth when we found out that that Christopher Walken was the emperor, and most of them were, your daddy gave me the spice, and I protected the spice in my asshole for a good 20 years, and now I'm giving you the spice. Why is it Italian now? Thank you. Christopher Walken, if he was Italian, protected some
games. He becomes Mario.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was so strange. He looked like Christopher Walken, and he just had that Queen's accent. Like
God's honest truth, it was like Christopher Walken rolled out of bed.
Yeah.
Whoever did his makeup and hair was like, nah, fuck it. He's fine. I'm not touching Christopher Walken.
Right.
It took me out of the movie.
And I didn't realize this until I read it somewhere, but that's the first movie he's done in a few years.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's retired or if he just was chilling, but like they brought him back with this role, and he just showed up. Yeah. He's like, I mean, are we starting 2 minutes? I'm good.
That's fine. Yeah. Give me my hair pick.
Exactly.
My thought is like, is he a fan? Did he pull some strings? Does he know Vilmo or somebody? And was like, I need to be the emperor.
Yeah.
I need to be on stage. I
read an interview a few months. This was well before the movie was out, but I read an interview with him and he was talking about how I think I'm quoting him here. He read one of the books when he was a kid. He didn't even say I read Dune or I read the first one. He said he read one of the books when he was a kid. So it's not like Stephen Colbert like showing up in The Hobbit. You know what I mean? It's not like Die Hard like getting like his shot. It was just
I read the Golden Book edition.
and
I write Elvish.
Denis Villeneuve is usually like on point with his casting. Uh-huh. Like he picks these characters that play these parts really good. So again, I don't know. I mean, I'm not even sitting there saying I hated it. I just can't decide if I hated it or loved it.
Every person cast in these films has been spot on, except for obviously to me, Christopher Walken. And I also, I think she's lovely in everything she does for the most part. But Florence Pugh was another one where I'm like, really? She's the emperor's daughter now? So now I'm trying to reconcile the fact that the emperor is Christopher Walken.
Right.
And all I can apply to him is all of the campy characters he's ever played because there was not the... You know, Deer Hunter or whatever Christopher Walken was not Deer Hunter. Not that version of Christopher Walken where you're like, he's intense and it's real. Right. And it's like, why didn't they just get fucking, Green Goblin there? What's his name?
I can picture his face.
Yeah.
Defoe. Defoe.
Why not just get Willem Dafoe at this point? If you just want a face.
Yeah.
Right. Just.
You know what? Willem Dafoe to me is always going to be. The inspector from Boondock
Saints. Nice.
Always.
Yeah.
There was a firefight! Boom, 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 boom. He could do it.
That
kind of makes me feel like river dancing.
nice. We should do that one.
I haven't seen that one since college. I would love to.
But Florence Pugh was just, I just don't think she was utilized correctly. She just, Princess Irulan is not who, I don't picture like a her kind of figure. Everybody, Anya Taylor-Joy, I think would have been a much better casting for that role. Florence Pugh could have been the grown-up daughter or whatever. It just, everything felt funky after I found out that Christopher Walken's the fucking emperor.
Yeah, so Walken, the emperor, comes across like your uncle from Queens.
Yeah.
And his daughter comes across like way, it's weird to say way too modern when this actually is 10,000 years in the future, but like, she didn't have that like sci-fi fantasy feel. Like she literally just felt like someone you'd just like, I know I work with her. Like she's, you know what I mean? Like she had that very modern feel to her. And then also and it also changed that character because in the book, that character is represented as being somewhat I don't want to say powerless. That's not the right word, but like, you know, the sisters don't like take her seriously, and right, they're just trying to use her to manipulate the genetic experiment. And, you know, in this, it's like, she's very much like she's calculating and she's telling her father what he needs to do. And it's like, I didn't read that in the books.
No, the Emperor was like, shut up, sit down. We're going.
The books were much more about her, like keeping track of the whole epic as she witnessed it and writing it down. And it was like a cursory application of that, where she's like keeping a diary, but there was no import to it. Yeah.
Now, I haven't read Messiah, which is am I correct in saying that's the next book?
The second one. Yep.
No, you're right. Do Messiah, then Children. Yeah.
And
then,
because I know that they at least optioned or have already agreed to make Children. Messiah.
Yeah.
So like, are they saving the setup of Paul's sister? Are they saving the setup of her differently?
I can only hope
for Messiah.
It's gotta be right.
I haven't read it, so I don't know if any of that conjecture makes sense.
If they could do that well, it would be enough in the future where Anya Taylor-Joy makes sense.
Yep.
They'd have to age Timothy Chalamet up a little bit and Zendaya. But I mean, they could make it work. They could do it. They could absolutely do it. But and maybe post rectify some of
these. I'd be really curious, though, because we're sitting here talking about how much they have to trim down Dune to fit it into a couple movies. Dune Messiah is a very slim text and not it's very philosophical in terms of narrative. Not a ton happens. It's hard for me to see how they would be able to make that into equally as an epic of a film to match the first two.
I think it's doable only because if you think about the Hollywood arc now, which is always the three movie arc, everything's got to be told in three
sometimes
parts.
Four if you do a prequel.
Yeah. Well, that comes after, you know, that's the ancillary thing. Dune, but
the birth of Paul.
Yeah, exactly. Or Dune, the jihad or whatever, you know, like it's the, I think they could do it as a part three culmination of the entire Paul Atreides sort of like arc. He becomes what he didn't want to be.
Right.
And he walks away from it and kills himself essentially because he realizes what he's done and knows that also because he sees everything that it'll all work out in the end as long as he removes himself from the galaxy and just lets it kind of play out.
That's an interesting character arc for me. Mm-hmm. I would watch
it. It is. It's brilliantly written too. I mean,
but what you just said reminded me of your first complaint, which I said I have one complaint about pacing, and I said I don't even know if I wanted to use the word complaint because it's very tepid. But I felt the exact same way about you, about how quickly he went. Because we got like half an hour of screen time or more of him being like, you know, like, I can't go to the South. Like, those people will turn me into a god, and I know where that's going to lead.
Free dreams, cuddling with Zendaya.
Exactly. And Zendaya is the one who keeps like saying, like, no, you got to do this. Like, we got to go get their army. And he's telling her, like, no, because this is exactly what will happen, like, emotionally. Yeah. And she's like, I'll always stand by you. I'll always love you. And then, like, he drinks that water of life. And immediately he's got that like sinister look in his eye. You know, it's like he just drank the water and it's like, okay, now he's the God King. And then there's the very next scene I think you mentioned is like the where he storms into the meeting and he like blows it up and he's screaming at everybody. And it's like, well, boy, that happened quickly. That's like Anakin in the Revenge of the Sith.
Very apt comparison.
And then Zendaya is all of a sudden like she's surprised by all of this. Like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah. And she gets real pissed off about being pushed away.
Which is not what she does in the books at all. That was changed.
She is much more supportive than
And I don't like have a problem with Villeneuve changing that because you do want some contrast on screen. Like you do want a character that is like resisting what Paul's doing so that the audience can feel that instead of just cheering for it. But they changed that for sure. That was different in the books and on screen. I mean, if you're an overthinker like we are, you're watching that going like, wait, he told her that shit was going to, it's like, don't give me, you know, that heroin. Cause that'll fuck me right up. She's like, it'll be fine. And then
chase that dragon.
Now I'm an addict. And she's like, holy shit. How did that happen?
Well, they did things that make sense in a movie payoff too. Like, oh, her name, her secret name is Tears of the Desert. And she cries into him and it revives him, blah, blah, blah. They cut out Leto too completely. Like their child. Cause they compressed the timeline. There was not enough time for them to get down and, you know, have a kid, I guess. So that whole thing, which is what really unites them, is the tragic death of a child.
Right.
Yeah. That really is what holds their relationship together. Although I have to say, in the aftermath of what the choices they had to make, the empowering Chani to be like the she kind of takes her own path and she leaves and everything, right. Sort of like almost like Paul in the end of the whole thing. I thought it was a neat twist for the book people who are looking for something new.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, that kind of worked the way they set it up. And I wasn't too disappointed with the fact that she just disappears at the end. And I'm like, that gives you something to look
for. I think that that's overall a positive change. I mean, it's like some of the stuff they had to do in Lord of the Rings, where like the women are non-existent in the book for the most part. So they had to become stronger on screen.
Except they wrote out the woman who kills the emperor at 4.
Yeah.
They cut, like, that was one thing that I thought was such an interesting twist that I did not expect from a book of the era that Herbert wrote. Like, the girl is the one who, like, ends a lot of it with killing the emperor.
I don't think she killed the emperor. She killed
because the emperor's in the Baron next book.
The Baron, not the Nah Baron. Yeah.
She kills her grandfather.
But they actually forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was annoyed because I was looking forward to that scene.
Right, yeah, same.
And that twist, and I wanted to see how they were going to play it out. And then
that's a great point.
But Villeneuve gave it to Paul. Because, like, again, he is the...
Paul gets everything.
He is the main focus. Yeah, he's the white savior.
So, I mean, this is probably then a good time to start talking about like a lot of the stuff that the movie did well, because
favorites.
Wait, do I need to real quick? Fuck. All
right. Just whatever you're gonna say, you like. Fuck it.
Yeah, got it out of my way.
Okay.
But that scene you're talking about though, and at the end where he comes storming in and all that. I thought that scene was done so fucking well because Paul doesn't necessarily look heroic in that moment.
I will agree.
He looks fucking terrifying. You know what I mean? Yeah. He looks like the leader of like a scary militia. You know, he comes in and he's got the fucking like desert gear on and shit. And like everyone's just completely still as he stalks around the place and he kills the Baron, you know, like, and he fucking like eyes off with the Emperor and shit.
Well, shoots down the grandmother. Was that grandmother? What the hell's her name?
The
Reverend Mother.
Reverend Mother.
He's like, silence. Right. And he voices her. Like, that was so cool.
But I thought that was done so well because it wouldn't. Again, if you're into Dune and you know where Paul's character goes and what happens in space afterwards, you don't want a heroic Paul in that moment. Like you don't want him to come in and be like, yes, this is him winning and it be this triumphant moment. You want a sense of that, like that road he's going down and how he's become this scary leader now. I felt that watching that in the theater. I was like, oh, he looks terrifying right now.
No, that was. I agree. That was actually a really good way to balance that character between what the audience wants to see versus what the story needs.
Right.
But what got me also getting back to my, you know, fuck this, the just like the pacing again, all of a sudden the jihad just happens. Oh, climb aboard these ships let's go. And it's
take
like
it a paradise.
What? There's like there's no pause. There's no like, hey, let's gather our shit and let's go. One thing I did really appreciate was how he shows that the combat is very limited and it's very personal, almost like medieval style. Like, yes, they have guns. Yes, they have rockets and they've got all this ray gun shit, lasers. Yes. All that crap. But war is much more small,
right?
Like a very small scale. And I think that's a really cool way to do it. But yeah, you mentioned it. The fucking atomic thing, which is a big fucking deal in the book. Like, oh, we've got the Atreides,
Atomics.
And they actually, they're building it up. Like, oh, they got it. Oh, and he's got, what's his, Gurney Halleck?
Yeah.
He's back. Oh, boy, it's coming. Oh, fucking 2 seconds. They didn't even say the plan. There was no, like, they got to blow up the shield wall so the Saviors can come in. No, it's basically like you're going to see some stuff and then all of a sudden Paul's the Emperor.
Yeah.
What? Like, what the fuck?
Actually, now that you mention that, there's a great scene where this is actually kind of really bad storytelling where Paul's explaining the plan and it's like some cliche cartoon from, because he's like, you're going to bring the sandworms in from the east and then I'm going to come in from the west.
Yeah.
And Johnny, that's
I think I heard the word flank in there somewhere, you know?
Yeah. But there's like a casual audience would not know why they had to blow up this shield wall thing. They don't know what the fuck that is. If you're just listening to it as a sci-fi, oh, shields, maybe there's like electric. No, like it's an actual freaking, it's like there's an actual like shelf of rock they got to blow up so the sandworms can get them right in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like, again, no real exposition on that, which I thought was like, Someone who read the books.
He's ready to rage and turn into the Hulk.
You won't like me when I'm angry.
If you read it, it was awesome. And it was really cool to see him go like fire and the fucking nukes and blow. Wow. But then it's like, if you are like my daughter who had no idea and she tried to read the graphic novel and was like, gave up on it. She's like, I can't do this.
Fair.
Liked the movie, the first one, saw this one. She's like, this is really good. But like, what was all that about? And I'm like, anytime I have to sit there and explain shit to somebody, that's a failure.
Yeah.
It's a failure. So as triumphant and as good as this movie is to me, ultimately, there is too much meat left on the bone that I think in 2 hours and 45 minutes could have been better served.
Could we have done a part 2A and 2B?
No, I think he could have done it. I think he could have done it all in these two movies with what we needed to see so far. I feel like the emphasis was on things that it didn't need to be on. And that's the hill I'll die on tonight.
Sure. Sure. I'm going to put my flag on a couple things that I liked, as you guys did. One of them is how personal the combat was. Mm. But this is a thing that is probably just a me thing. I hate when combat is blurry and you can't see what's going on. And shaky I get it, camera, fog of war, and it's hard to see. Fuck you, Michael Bay, with your goddamn lens flares. But you saw everything, but it was dirty. Yeah. It was quick. You know, you got the visceral nature of the fighting with swords. Yeah, you could shoot a guy with a laser from 30 feet away, but it didn't happen. No one got cut in half with a laser and then slid off. Yeah. Even then. You know, they got shot and they dropped viscerally in front of Paul and Chani. Or was it Paul and his mom at that point?
I don't remember.
It was one of the two. So I loved the choice to make everything personal because it changed the scope of the visuals for me.
And I completely agree with you. I was actually reminded of how much I hate shaky cam and quick cuts recently because my wife and I rewatched the Bourne trilogy. Mm. The first one's excellent. It's definitely got the shaky cam stuff going on. The second and third one, though, they go so hard with the camera. Like it's like literally quarter second cuts and everything is shaking that you feel like you're going to have a seizure watching it.
Yeah.
And what you said is what happens is the action becomes incoherent. You literally don't know what you're watching. You're like, oh, guy jumps, car crashes, like a bomb went off somewhere. But like none of it makes sense in terms of what's happening.
Right. You don't have the storyboard sitting next to you to go, that's the attention there. Okay.
So but that's one thing that I hope it's going away. But Denis Villeneuve is such a visual director, like such a visual storyteller. Even before he got into the sci-fi stuff, like if you've seen like Prisoners or Sicario, some of his earlier films, like he's so good at capturing like your attention with the awe-inspiring visuals. Yeah. And when he switched to sci-fi with Arrival and then Blade Runner and now Dune, that's why he's so good. That's why he's so good at science fiction, is because where a lot of other, I think, directors are trying to play tricks with the camera and special effects, he's figuring out how he can actually put this shit in front of you. And you can go through these movies and think about, you mentioned some of the Dune 1 ones. In Dune 2, I mean, when he rides the sandworm, or when we go to the Harkonnen planet and we're in the like gladiatorial place, and some of that's the Hans Zimmer soundtrack too, by the way, it's really intense. And even the more intimate stuff, like you're talking about the hand to hand combat and all that shit, you know, there's never lack of cohesion, and it's not only good, it's awe inspiring. You're sitting there watching that shit going like, holy fuck, this is the most badass shit. You know, he's really good at that.
I think that's where some of the character building comes from, right? So like in the first movie, we see Paul fighting with Gurney Halleck, and it's very much Atreides fighting, right? It's upright, it's shields, whatever. Now he's in the desert and you see like leg sweeps with a knife drop and then a stab to the kidney, roll up and then go protect Chani in 3 seconds, and he doesn't even think about it. Right. And that's how you see the character transition over to that, which gets me to the other thing that I need to talk about, because you mentioned the Na Baron scenes shot in IR. I didn't know it was shot in IR. I knew there was some different affect placed onto the film.
It's because of the sun or something like that in their system.
Okay, thank you. That was my question. Like, I actually liked that character building. I wanted more. I get, like, he's a terrible person. He kills his women slaves and feeds them to his other women slaves and, you know,
which is not cool.
No, it's definitely not okay. We know the Harkonnens are also like, there's that whole like, you know, isn't it with the Baron Harkonnen who like sexually abuses young children or something like that in
that
the
was
book.
Minimized,
in the movies, which I get. That's not palatable. Yes. Yeah. We don't need to play that up. But yeah, that answers that. Then the son is the reason why that was shot in IR.
Yeah, it's was it Gaze Prime or Geddes Prime, whatever.
I always pronounce it Geddes.
Yeah,
but I'm not the one to go to for any pronunciation.
I think it's Geddes. The their homeworld, it's whatever their son is, it's creating that effect. So if you notice, like when they were in interior shots where it was artificial lighting, it didn't look that way.
Yeah,
it was only when they were outside, and like the fireworks and things that were going off was really cool. That's just fireworks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's but all they it were is. Like, they were like, they almost felt like
squid in or something.
Gel or liquid.
Yeah. Or
gel,
like, not, jellyfish.
Jellyfish.
That's like, what it looked like. Yeah. But that's actually just fireworks in IR. That's what that is.
Wow.
So it's a really awesome. And again, I got to give credit to Villeneuve for having this, like, I'm going to do it. Like, this is a different sun. It's going to look fucking different. So let's fucking do it. I love that.
I saw him in an interview talk about how that was a risk too. Because it's not like they have two separate cameras running when they do all that. And he's like, you know, if this shit didn't work out, then like, he's like, that was a lot of wasted time that we got to go back and fix. So
but it was striking,
but it was fucking awesome. It was really cool.
And it did make the point of getting the knob and the actor, Austin Butler.
Yeah.
Like, he looked vile.
Oh, yeah.
All around vile.
No eyebrows was the most unsettling thing.
Number one, you shave your eyebrows, you're a terrible human being.
It's pretty bad.
But yeah, he was the stuff of nightmares, man. He was just so terrifying.
But in the end, he actually still had the honor, too.
Yeah.
Of, like, you could tell he was the alternate Kwisatz Haderach. Like, if it wasn't going to be Paul, it could have been him.
Right.
Yeah. And you could see, he's fucking psycho and twisted. But there's still a sense of honor baked into this guy, which is just absurd.
Well, yeah, because he fights even in the gladiatorial fight. He one of the guys, the last guy that he kills or whatever, when he knows like
Atreides.
His uncle, he realizes that his uncle hasn't drugged that dude because his uncle's testing him or whatever. Right. And he decides he's going to fight him anyway. And then he says something to that guy as he's dying. Was it like you fought well or something like that? Right. So
after pulling his shield off,
a totally depraved monster. Yes. But at the same time, like you said, like even monsters can have their own codes. And
And like he watched his uncle die and you could see the look, he played it very well. The look on his face of like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Like not like anger or anything. Right. Just like, okay.
I'm the Baron now.
But I wish, like I said earlier, the pacing and like, I think he just lingered too long there where it might have been better to do it almost Star Wars-esque where we get like, oh, a wipe, go to this place. A wipe, go to that place. A wipe, come back. It would have been better to have a little back and forth. As Paul journeys, maybe there's the alternate Kwisatz Haderach journey or whatever. It could have been a little bit better as far as immersion in that regard.
It's not a bad point because cutting back and forth like that also helps create the illusion of like time passing a little more. Yes.
And the tension between those two specific characters would have been, I think, better played up. But maybe it was too cliche for Villeneuve to do it. I don't know.
Yeah,
it could be. I mean, like you said, he's known for being such a visual person that I feel like it just didn't fit maybe his aesthetic either.
Well,
like to do. Yeah. I know you're talking like, not just specifically the wipe transition from one to the other, but like, that's what I picture in like, what is it? Episodes 1, 2, and 3, where they literally did the left, right wipe from like Microsoft PowerPoint.
Nice to
change the scenes. Yeah. Like, thanks paperclip for helping me pick that dissolve.
He's
fuck you, Bill Gates, by the way, that's a random fuck you for me. Fuck
you, but now that you guys mentioned that, there's an interesting irony to the fact that like Star Wars and George Lucas were so heavily influenced by Dune.
Yes.
And now Denis Villeneuve making Dune has to like take obvious, like, you know, precautions to not feel like it's ripping off Star Wars. Right. You know what I mean?
The circle is complete. Well, you could have done like when the navigator ship comes in, they could have done the overhead, like it comes in.
This bit, it just keeps going.
He just did it from the side.
Like that great baseball scene where that ship just keeps going.
There was no side scroll or there was no like top scroll down letters possible.
How are we supposed to know what the story is?
I know a lot of Dune people are upset that they didn't show a navigator either. And I understand the reasoning behind not doing it, but I'm hoping Villeneuve, I know you're listening.
Friend of the cast.
Right. When you do Messiah, please Let us see a Navigator.
He'll have to if he does Messiah. God, that's a pretty major character in that.
Yeah, that would be something.
We almost got it with House Harkonnen controlling the ships around, right?
Yeah.
They're not Navigators, but they're like setting up the concept of a Navigator there as they like chant together around the hologram and look at stuff.
There's an opportunity to get really into the lore of what the spice does to people, the mentats, explaining that a little bit more, because that was never, I mean, it was kind of just like, that guy rolled his eyes and, oh, he's a computer. I get it.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. It's like, again, if you didn't know, you didn't know, right? If you know, you know. Yeah. That's it. That's a tagline for Villeneuve's Dune. If you know, you know.
Well, we've talked about like things that we thought could have been done better. We've talked about some of the visuals and stuff. Should we talk about some of these like performances maybe? Like
go
through some of the characters?
Let's each pick one character we want to talk about or one actor.
Yeah, we can't all pick Zendaya.
Fuck!
All right, guys, Adam, you can have that one.
There are 42 named credited characters on IMDb's Dune Part 2. Plenty of space here for everybody.
We already talked about Walken and Pugh. Last. Timothée Chalamet's just kind of like, he's good. No. I can't say he's not a good Paul. He's probably the best guy they could have got to play Paul right now. So I guess that's good.
I like, honestly, I think I said this after Dune 1, like I like him in the part. Like I don't know him from a ton of other stuff. I did see Wonka recently with the kids. I thought he was fine in that. But
he's a good actor.
I think he does a nice job like summoning the youthful naivete when he needs to. Mm-hmm. But he also does a nice job summoning the like a leader coming into his own when he needs to. And at the very end of this movie, when he had to become like the God King, I felt like he did pretty good with that too. So I like him in this. I was laughing a lot at, is it Javier Bardem? Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
As Stilgar?
So Stilgar.
Stilgar. Yeah.
Like Adam, I am also not the guy to come to for pronunciation.
Tune into our next cast when we are reading The Mountain in the Sea by Ray Naylor. Those fucking names, man. Oh, it's going to be bad.
We should just have a behind the scenes cast where Sean just teaches us how to pronounce
them. He's like our accent coach.
No. But I was laughing. Chalamet. I was laughing a lot at this character because it felt like every 3 seconds, like Paul would do something. Mm-hmm. Like maybe it was minorly impressive or it was that he would take a shit, a very impressive shit. Yeah. And then Stilgar is like,
written, you know, he's more deep. Yeah. It is him.
Only he can take a shit that is 3 feet long.
And then at one point in the movie, they actually, I feel like they're kind of poking fun at that because he says that he's not, I am not your savior, blah, 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 whatever. And then Stilgar turns to like him and his buddies who think just like he does. And he's like, it is written that the savior would deny that he was the savior. Yes. Yeah. So if anything, this proves it.
But I like I like what he did with that too, because Stilgar is obviously the devotee who gets the whole thing going. And then you had Chani and the others who are basically this bullshit.
Right.
Yeah. There is, that's all stuff that it's not, it's religious garbage. This is not real.
Right, right.
That was a pretty cool balance that way.
No, and I loved him. And he was one of those characters that, like, it changes in an interesting way as like from 1 to 2. And in 1, he's this real gruff desert badass, you know, like he comes in and he like spits on the emperor's floor and he's like, ah, maybe we'll be friends, maybe not, whatever. And then in this one, he's like the, you know, dude who like just worships Paul for every little thing that Paul does, you know, and he's funny. Like he's kind of comic relief in the second movie.
Real quick, I got to interject something because you mentioned Stilgar and everything. And I'm thinking of Jamis, who really did not have a very long role in this. Why the hell was Paul calling on him at the end? Like, Jamis, help me. Show me. Like, what the fuck was that?
Was that, that was not in the book, was it?
No.
Where he was haunted by Jamis?
No.
Yeah.
It's weird. I don't believe it was.
I mean, no offense to, I'm looking up Jamis's
actor.
Jamis's, I thought that actor did a nice job.
Oh, yeah.
Like in the hand-to-hand.
Is it Babs?
Yeah, I think it's Babs Willis-Somakin.
Yeah.
In the duel, like, you know, when Paul unintentionally insults him by asking him if he yields. And this dude's like face turns like bright red with rage.
Yeah. No, he was good. Yeah.
Like, I thought he did a nice job. But yeah, that whole thing, like reaching out to him or remembering him or whatever that was.
It's just because, again, the character got no real like play in the movie. Right. There was like no like consequence. Oh, Paul inherited his entire life. Like, no,
no.
There might be. Oh, no, he did. He did say there are no deleted scenes. We're not going to get anything. This is it.
Shit. I will still buy it immediately the second it comes out on 4K UHD. Don't care what the price is, but I will buy the two pack. I'll wait for the two pack, one and two, to come out.
Two-pack. Yeah. Before Adam waxes poetic about Zendaya, I'm going to talk about Stellan Skarsgård.
Oh yeah,
You know, again, a bad guy
from the illustrious Skarsgård clan of like 47 actors.
God. Yeah, holy shit, that family just keeps cranking out hits.
Yeah, there's not, every time like a new movie comes out and it's like this is Jeff Skarsgård.
Yeah,
like,
Jeff Skarsgård.
I didn't know there was a Jeff.
Yeah, this is Dolly Skarsgård. She's
Olaf Skarsgård, Dolly Skarsgård, and Jeff.
But Stellan's the OG, right? Like he's like the as far as progenitor.
But he looks like the older.
God, sure does.
He was so good as Baron Harkonnen.
Yes, he was.
Just like the menace and the decadence and just the depravity and the he's got his sights set on being emperor. Like all of it there, and I'm like, wow, this dude fucking nailed this character. He could not have done a better job.
It was hard for me to picture in my head that character reading the book. I couldn't tell if this character was supposed to be sinister or was this character supposed to be like kind of like ridiculous.
Comical in their like opulence. I read it.
It was hard to tell. And then watching Dune 1, I was like, oh, I get it. It's Marlon Brando from Apocalypse Now. Like he's like a fucking dude who's so far off the deep end and willing to do literally anything to accomplish what he wants. You know?
Right. Yeah. And this the revelation that he is Paul's grandfather and Jessica's father. Again, I feel like it got short shrift because of time constraints.
Yeah, it seemed abrupt.
In the books, it's such a big payoff to your reading that you're like, oh, fuck. You know, it's one of those twists that it got the, grandfather. Oh, okay.
I may or may not have fallen asleep during that part because I bought a $13 beer to sit by myself in the dark and watch the movie.
They sell beer at Regal now.
And so there were no prices listed. So I just bought the IPA because that's what I do. And I'm like, that was the price of the ticket. I regret this. And then we're talking and I'm like, that had to happen. Yeah. No, I know it happened. I wasn't drunk because I had one beer throughout a 3 hour, 3.5
hour
movie.
Well, they sell you the big beer though.
It was 20 ounces.
Were there other people in your theater when you saw it?
There were three other people, four rows behind me.
I was in a pack. I went 2 weeks after it opened.
Yeah.
Well, packed fucking house. I'm sitting there with my daughter and the guy next to me is over there toking on his fucking vape the whole time. His weed vape. And I'm just sitting there like, I wanted to say something, but I'm not that guy.
Right.
And I'm just like, I just looked at my daughter. I'm like, just, you want to go? And she's like, no, it's not really bothering me. And I'm like, all right. And it's just
like, no, I'm fine with the content.
And just people being loud. Some guy answering his phone. I'm like, people, it's a fucking movie. God damn it. You know, act like an adult and go and see a movie like a real human being.
Agreed.
If you want to stay home and vape or whatever, fine. But if you're going to be out in public, then you keep your vape in your pocket.
Put that shit away for a
and you keep your fucking phone on silent.
Yeah.
There it is.
Hell yeah.
I did not have that experience because, like I said, there was four people and I enjoyed, maybe it was my fault, the Regal recliners because I was in the third row. Because the only other people in the stadium took my seats that I always get, which is row F.
Yep.
Center. I'm like, fine, fuck it. This is over. I'm getting row C and I'll recline.
Nice.
And I did. So I missed the reveal about the grandfather stuff. And y'all think I'm going to talk about Zendaya. She's gorgeous. She does what she needs to do. Cool, fine.
She's queen.
It is known. It is written.
It is
that
known.
She's my celebrity pass. But I have a Spider-Man costume, Zendaya. So I wanted to actually talk about Dave Bautista.
Oh,
Rabin.
Yeah. Right?
Because that dude goes from Drax. I've mastered the art of moving so slow that you can't. No, he goes from badass motherfucker on the planet, running everybody with fear and rage, except for the scenes between him and Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah.
When, you know, he's like, tighten your grip, Rabban. And he's like, oh, fuck. And he goes out into the field and he sees Paul fight and he cowers and runs back.
Right, yeah.
And his ass is saved by his pilot.
Yeah.
As the Fremen fighter is like, for Mordi.
Yeah.
It falls off the plane. I thought that acting was great. I was impressed with it because I'd only seen him in Guardians of the Galaxy prior to this.
Yeah.
Very impressed.
Batista is actually one of those like long line of professional wrestlers who I think because of the performance art of professional wrestling, he gets it. And he knows how to act. He's very good. And I hate to say, I think he's typecast a little bit, but I feel like he nails it. When he gets a job like that, he nails it.
He showed up in briefly at the beginning of Blade Runner 2049. And that was a pretty emotional scene because like he knows what's happening and you know, he's, you know, it's like fate at that moment. He plays it well. But yeah, he, a lot of his scenes in this movie were very like cringy. And I mean that as a compliment to the way he played it
because
it's supposed to be a guy who realizes things are slipping from his grip.
Yep.
And he tries to like go bigger and crazier to get things back in his grip. So a lot of it, he's just always like screaming at people and going nuts and it's like cringy, but you're like, yeah, that's a dude who knows he's losing it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you're not insane enough for your family. Yeah. Sorry, buddy. Try. Oh, there is
that's
no
a great
next
way
time.
To put it.
Yeah, that's pretty much nails it right there. Yeah.
So I was impressed by him. Nothing against Zendaya, of course.
No, we all love Zendaya.
For sure.
She's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I thought we could end with one thing you'd want to see in Messiah. I think, Sean, you've already mentioned
good question.
It.
Well, I mean, the extended passionate scene between Paul and Zendaya, I think we all want to see that.
I would literally join the OnlyFans for 2 months if that was a thing I could do.
No. I you know,
at
honestly,
least one paycheck.
In all honesty, I think I really want to see the completion of Paul's arc.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I want to see how they play him going from being reluctant Messiah to being, well, it's on now, to then realizing that he's got to get out of it and he's got to do something to change the one vision of history or the future that he sees is the only way out and make it work. And I think that'd be pretty cool if you could pull it off. I want to see it done in one movie. I want to see this happen as a trilogy. Mm-hmm. And then I want to see Villeneuve step away and not do any more. Because I think after that,
not do any more Dune anything.
Villeneuve has said that he may not even do the third, that he'd have to be like sure that it was worth doing before he'd commit to it.
I think he will.
And then he went on to say, and then that would definitely be the last one because he doesn't want to just be sci-fi Dune guy forever, which I would agree with. I need him to get back to making other stuff too.
Considering the return and the accolades he's received for this one, I can't see him not doing it.
Yeah. I think that those comments were probably made before the movie came out. I don't remember when I read them, but like, I mean, the movie's obviously been a fucking smash hit. So,
oh, for sure.
As far as what I'd want to see, like I said before, I'd be very curious. A lot of that book is very philosophical. Mm-hmm. It's super interesting to read. I think there's mixed reviews on Dune Messiah, but that's because a lot of, you know, if you're not coming to the book for the philosophy, but like you want like the action story of like, you know, the military stuff, then yeah, that book will disappoint you.
Yeah.
The philosophy is really interesting to read, but you got to make a movie out of it, you know, and I'd be curious to see how he does that. And then I would agree with Sean, because I think the most compelling visual stuff comes at the, and I won't say what it is because, you know, spoiler alerts, but at the very end of that book, what goes on with Paul's character is really intense, serious shit. And I think visually, you know, that could look really dramatic on screen and be just loaded with devastating pathos.
Oh, yeah.
That would be cool to see.
Chalamet could pull it off.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, he's very good, honestly. Like, I only know him from these two movies and Wonka, but like,
that's pretty big range.
It's a Savior huge range.
Candyman.
Yes, yeah. Like the God King whose jihad spreads across the universe, or the dude who makes chocolate and is quirky. But but I feel like in this role as Paul, like I feel like, you know, I can already start to picture what that might look like, and it's impressive. Mm-hmm. And Villeneuve's the director, you know, to do it, and that would be the most, you know, interesting part to see achieved.
I'm looking forward to his turn as Jack White in the new biopic that's coming out.
Oh, actually, he is playing Bob Dylan. Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, you're really?
Yeah, for
real. I was
going to
say that. Yeah.
Wow. I just totally made that up out of my head.
Yeah. Like,
wow.
No, he plays like 60s Bob Dylan. I'm that's so old. Fucking pumped, man.
Yeah.
Can he pull up the boys?
Oh, yeah. Well, come on.
I'm ready for the hurricane.
I will tell
no,
you.
No, that's 70s Dylan, man.
Sorry,
calm down.
Sorry.
You're getting 60s Dylan here.
This is from the guy who saw the Bob Dylan musical and was like, the music has nothing to do with the story whatsoever. It's like, is this paid for by Bob Dylan, or did somebody love Bob Dylan and pay him to use his music?
I don't know anything about it. I'm going to guess it's the latter. Dylan doesn't seem like the type of, although I, I shouldn't fucking say that. Dylan does everything you don't expect him to do.
Yeah.
He put out a fucking Christmas record 10 years ago, right?
Yeah,
and when he announced he was doing it, everyone was like, what the fuck? Like, first of all, he's fucking Jewish, or he was, right? He came from a Jewish family, right?
Best Christmas songs are written by Jewish people.
That's also true. Also true. But then it was like, well, he's going to do something really ironic. Like, it's going to be funny, tongue-in-cheek, whatever. It's a fucking straight Christmas album. Like, fucking like sleigh bells and shit. Oh, yeah. Like, and he fucking sings the song with songs with no irony. Silent Night, like, you name it, it's all on there. And it's just
Silent Night.
No, it's not even that. It's not even that. That's like 60s Dylan. This is like,
you gotta mumble more.
This is nowadays like totally wrecked from decades of smoking. Like, his voice sounds like scratching glass with your nails or something.
But, oh my God.
Silent Night.
Of course, if you're me, I fucking love it. But it's definitely not for everyone.
Mike already has the LP.
Oh, I never bought it on LP because it was either not available or too expensive.
Well, I'm looking forward to
that. I did buy it on CD when it came out like 14 years ago.
I'm looking forward to Dylan's new McNugget sauce that McDonald's is going to be launching soon.
Yeah.
He always does what you don't expect.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. You had me, actually. You had me.
Rip this thing up, Adam. Yes. Ramble on forever.
Yeah, yeah. As the guy who's not seen Dune Messiah, I'm hard to forecast out of this. This was really more of a, or not read Dune Messiah. It's really a question for you guys. But I'd love to see the political intrigue play out a little bit more with the Reverend Mothers and them trying to control things from the behind the scenes. I'm trying to read your face to see if this is in the book or not.
It is.
Yes. Okay. Then I'm, fuck you. Sean is intentionally making a face to not tell me anything. But I don't know if that happens or not, but I would see it either way.
What's the sisterhood called there? The
Traveling Pants.
No.
Yes.
The Traveling Pants. Yes. What the fuck?
The witches, the Night Sisters.
The Night Sisters. I know. They're all the same. I can't think of the freaking name. I know. It's like,
it's on the tip of my brain.
Everything's escaping me at this moment, but they,
the Crazy 88.
Yeah, the Crazy. They have a huge role in the entire thing. So, okay.
Well, that's good.
Big time.
So, I would ask us usually, dear listener, if this is your first cast with us. Awesome. Thanks. You should read or listen to our other stuff and read the other books with us. It's a good time. Especially what we have coming up in a sec, but I think I know we're all yeses on this, so there's no point in asking that.
Well, wait a minute. Don't make any assumptions over there.
Okay. You get 10 seconds.
I'll also say that people should hit us up on, is it Blue Sky?
Yes.
There's an ellipsis before and
hit us up on Blue Sky or whatever. Send us a Gmail.
Instagram,
you know,
maybe.
Or Instagram, and just tell us what you think they should do with Doom Messiah. That'd be kind of cool to read people's things. And then you know, we can maybe rap about it when we see the movie that comes out in like 3 years.
We're at Nerds of Old Republic on everything.
Yep.
Blue Sky as well. Is that right?
I believe so.
Okay. We're dabbling. But we've been burned by Elon Musk and the site formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah.
So we're all a little bit burnt out from that. But the best place to interact with us is here.
Yeah.
Subscribe on any podcatcher you use. Leave us up to a 5-star review. I say up to a 6-star because we're that awesome, but I'm trying to be. Yeah.
Venmo us money.
Yes. No, I'm just kidding. You could Gmail us at Nerds of Old Republic. We'd love to hear from you. This is why we get so much spam. Sorry, but I'm still doing it. And we'd love to see you metaphorically next time when we talk about Ray Naylor's The Mountain in the Sea. Get ready for so many different ways to talk about a group of octopuses. I hate saying that. Octopodes is my
preferred. Octopussies, Adam.
That's why I hate saying it. I have a long backstory here, but we'll be back in a couple of weeks with The Mountain in the Sea, and we'd love to hang out with you and talk about the book. So until next time, stay nerdy, y'all. Cheers.
Cheers.